ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
This podcast is recorded on the lands of the Awabakal, Darug, and Eora people. A couple of weeks before every Russian election, a fleet of four-wheel drives heads into the wilderness of Siberia, filled with paper ballots and plastic boxes. They're going to collect votes. One of the hundreds of towns they need to get to is Lugovaya village. There's no road to Lugovaya. The election officials drive across frozen rivers to get there. The people in Lugovaya are old believers, traditionalist Christians who reject any technological advances made since the 17th century. There's no internet or mobile coverage, and no TVs are allowed in the village. There are 46 registered voters in Lugovaya. Turnout on election day is 70%. It always is. The voters of Lugovaya have no idea of the incredible complexity involved in running a Russian election. 100 million votes are gathered at 100,000 polling places across 11 time zones in sub-zero temperatures. And the same guy always wins.
The Russian President Vladimir Putin has retained his grip on power, winning another six-year term in office.
This clip is from 2018, but I might as well use it again now because nothing has changed.
The landslide victory was not a surprise, but it will reinforce his power at home and allow him to continue asserting Russia's influence abroad.
Russia is in the midst of an election, but we already know that Putin will win. He always wins. If he serves out his term, beginning in 2024 and ending in 2030, he will gain the title of being both the youngest and oldest ever president of the Russian Federation. He'll be the longest-serving leader of Russia in two centuries, and if he serves out the term after that, he will be the longest-serving leader since Peter the Great, 300 years ago. If Putin is ever to leave office, it won't be at an election. And if that's the case, why does Russia bother holding elections? What's the point? Well, there is a reason, and it's more complicated than you might think. I'm Matt Bevan, and this is If You're Listening. How do you make sure you never lose an election? Well, a great way to do it is to find a model that works and then just keep repeating it. In 1996, Russia was set to hold its second ever presidential election, and the result seemed certain. Boris Yeltsin, the president, was going to lose in a landslide.
Not for the first time, Mr. Yeltsin appears out of tune with opinion.
Yeltsin himself was not doing well. While he tried to keep up his usual routine of publicity stunts, dancing enthusiastically at public events, conducting orchestras and such, he was covering up a number of health issues. He was an extremely heavy drinker. At one point during a visit to the United States, the US Secret Service found him in his underwear trying to hail a cab on the side of a street in Washington, D.C. He was drunk and hungry and wanted to go eat pizza.
In Moscow, parliamentary deputies called him a drunk and accused him of shaming the entire country.
But his years of heavy drinking had taken a toll on his health, and he was having regular heart attacks, which the government was going to great pains to cover up.
He's in good health, normal and fine. He's just got a cold.
Hear that? He's normal and fine. With less than 6 months to go until the presidential election, less than 10% of Russian voters said they supported him.
His alcoholic exploits left even this nation of heavy drinkers ashamed of their president.
There had been multiple attempts to throw him out of office, and supporters and opponents of Yeltsin were at war on the streets of Moscow.
Boris Yeltsin's tanks and troops are tonight still trying to put down an armed rebellion from within the Russian parliament.
Remember the January 6th insurrection in Washington in 2021, where Trump supporters stormed the Capitol? Well, in Moscow in 1993, President Yeltsin had gone a few steps further. He had brought in the army.
Tanks and troops are attacking the Russian parliament right now.
200 MPs barricaded themselves inside the parliament trying to impeach Yeltsin.
October 1993, and Boris Yeltsin orders the army to open fire on the old parliament.
When there weren't literal tank battles on the grounds of the parliament building, there were massive protests, and not the calm marching kind of protests, the flip over a bus kind. Yeltsin was not handling things well. And as all of this chaos was happening, he was trying to run an election campaign. He looked like he'd be lucky to come in third behind a right-wing nationalist and a left-wing communist. His only hope was to slide through the middle. Let's start with the guy on Yeltsin's right.
Vladimir Vovovich Zhirinovsky. Call him patriot, neo-fascist or clown, his message at bottom remains the same. I will make Russia great again.
Ugh. Just got a shiver down my spine.
I'm for Russian, for very strong Russia, for new economy for Russia, and it's not good for West.
Zhirinovsky would have fit in at any one of 100 far-right nationalist political parties around the world. He's got the exact same vibe as the new president of Argentina, Javier Milei. He's definitely not the kind of guy you would want as a neighbour.
A man who's threatened to poison the Baltic republics with nuclear waste, to wipe several European countries off the map, to blockade Japan and watch it starve.
But Yeltsin wasn't worried. Campaigning against nationalism in Russia isn't too hard. Just call the guy a fascist, a neo-Nazi, and he's going to struggle. Yeltsin did exactly that. He was confident that he could deal with Zhirinovsky. The threat from the left would be harder to fight off, though. It came in the form of a man with what, in the 90s, was a very intimidating title, one that had previously belonged to Joseph Stalin, General Secretary of the Communist Party. Now, remember, the Soviet Union had just collapsed 4 years earlier because of all the bad parts of communism. Secrecy, oppression, corruption, paranoia.
4 years ago, the party was outlawed, its leaders branded as criminals.
But Boris Yeltsin's radical reform agenda had led to a very rapidly growing inequality gap between Russia's rich and poor.
Many Russians have become rich in recent years, but many remain poor. Their jobs are at risk, while continuing high inflation leaves them playing a game of catch-up.
People miss the free healthcare and the steady employment.
Today, the communists are riding a wave of dissatisfaction with reform.
I say life under the communists was better. The wages were paid on time. We had money even though it wasn't much. Now the money's worth nothing.
They missed them so much that they were looking like they might like to bring communism back. Even if it meant voting for a man the ABC's Michael Brissenden called
the remarkably uncharismatic national leader, Gennady Zyuganov.
Zyuganov was trying to keep the old communist hardliners and attract a new, young, modern crowd.
We're a new-style communist party.
It's giving I'm not a regular communist, I'm a cool communist energy.
We're for private enterprise, not like the old Soviet party. We've dropped our old atheism. There's no need to fear us.
But look, if you're telling voters that there's no need to fear you, that's generally not a good sign. The platform was simple. Bring back communism. But it was inevitably going to make them some powerful enemies.
They're promising to peacefully restore the Soviet Union and to boost the economy through greater public spending. The platform also calls for nationalising key industries.
Interfering in the free market like that was going to piss off the new wealthy class of Russians who had benefited from the switch to capitalism. And restoring the old Soviet Union, that wasn't going to win any friends in Europe or America.
The United States must support President Yeltsin and the process of bringing about free and fair elections.
American political advisors were flown in to help Yeltsin's campaign, and American leaders stoked fear of the new cool Communist Party.
People have expressed the fear that if the communists do win, people may be sent back to camps and even worse, and that's a source of concern.
Well, if it wasn't before, now it is. Stoking fear of gulags became a key plank of Yeltsin's election campaign. He spread that message through state media outlets, saying that even if you don't like him, he's better than the alternatives.
Yeltsin's campaign office now admits it's been bribing journalists to write favourable stories.
So Yeltsin had an enemy. one that the West didn't like, and one that a lot of Russians had a reason to fear. It worked. In a tight race, Yeltsin defeated both Zhuganov and the right-wing candidate Zhirinovsky. The West was thrilled.
It is clear that a majority, a substantial majority of the Russian people, voted for President Yeltsin and for the path of reform. That bodes very good news for the future of the entire world.
But the good times didn't last. Yeltsin almost immediately went into hospital for quintuple heart bypass surgery and was out of action for months. His second term was only marginally less chaotic than his first.
His increasingly erratic behaviour over the past 3 years has fuelled continuing suspicion that the president is mentally ill.
He sacked four prime ministers before appointing a former spy that basically nobody had ever heard of to the job.
The Kremlin statement simply named Vladimir Putin, the boss of the revamped KGB, as the new prime minister.
Then, 4 months later, on the last day of the 20th century, Yeltsin resigned.
For the first time in 1,000 years, a Russian leader voluntarily gave up power.
Yeltsin swore in Vladimir Putin as the new president and handed over the keys to the Kremlin.
And he gave him the suitcase containing the codes that control the nuclear arsenal.
But Putin had learned some very salient lessons from Yeltsin. If the people hate you, find opponents they hate even more. It was early 2000 and Putin was faced with an immediate election campaign. Yeltsin had left the country in chaos.
Its economy is in ruins, civil war has broken out in its southern republic of Dagestan.
Yeltsin had also left behind two enthusiastic, noisy former opponents who wanted another crack at the presidency. Communist Gennady Zhuganov and far-right nationalist Vladimir Zhirinovsky. For Putin, this was a gift. These men had been beaten in 1996 by a drunk who was having regular heart attacks and had shelled his own parliament. They're both older than him too, which he loves. Putin felt like he would be able to beat them easily.
The incumbent always has an edge, but it's magnified here. There's no one who can rival the reach of the Kremlin political machine.
The only concern was if anyone else challenged him. The Kremlin used the state-run media outlets not to attack Zhuganov and Zhirinovsky, but to attack anyone else who was running for president.
State-run television has criticised Mr. Yavlinsky, alleging he's being funded by American backers.
Putin's campaign was given overwhelmingly positive coverage, even though
he's provided little detail of his policies.
The message was that Putin was a centrist. What was it that guy said?
Normal and fine.
Yes, normal and fine.
We love Mr. Putin very much, and we will vote only for him. He's young, handsome, and energetic. He's our hope.
He's a nice guy, just confident, looking decent, sane.
Sane? That's always nice. It worked fantastically.
The communist leader, Gennady Zhuganov, came a distant second.
You want to win an election? Just surround yourself with unelectable people. Vladimir Putin, or his puppet candidate, Dmitry Medvedev, have run in 4 elections since then. Zhirinovsky and or Zhuganov have been Putin's opponents every time. Zhirinovsky, spouting racism, sexism, homophobia and promises of free vodka if he wins, and Zhuganov preaching the virtues of a communist system, considered a relic of Russia's distant past. They create the illusion of true democracy, and they genuinely have millions of supporters, which helps Putin a lot. Putin needs a high voter turnout to help him claim that he is legitimately elected. In fact, mayors and governors around Russia know this, and so they find ways to drive up turnout in their area as a way to get noticed by the Kremlin and move up the ranks. Hence the four-wheel drives on frozen Siberian rivers.
This viral video has a seductively simple message. Real men always vote. It's sexy.
Driving up turnout is a loyalty test for potential top officials and a key reason why they keep going through the motions of an election. Putin rinses his chosen opponents every time, winning election after election after election.
The election has had just 4 candidates, with a string of others dropping out or being barred.
The real threat to Putin is not communists or nationalists. It's someone like him. A centre-right, pro-business, patriotic, social conservative. Normal and fine. Someone who says, I'll do it like Putin, but just without the rampant corruption. These are the people that Putin cannot tolerate. These are the people the Kremlin has to get rid of. The most prominent of Putin's opponents was Alexei Navalny. Despite his international fame, Alexei Navalny never held political office. He was a centre-right lawyer and a business blogger who started suggesting publicly that maybe Russia would be better without all the bribes. He rose to prominence in 2011 as a leader of anti-corruption protests.
Kremlin swindlers think that we will get tired of coming out onto the street. Have we had enough?
Over the following decade, Navalny became more and more prominent online and led, at times, quite large protest movements against Putin's government. He was barred from every election he ever tried to run in.
The Kremlin says he's ineligible to run because of a previous conviction. Navalny says the fraud charge against him was trumped up because of his anti-corruption activities.
He was repeatedly jailed, harassed, and intimidated. In 2017, he was partially blinded when someone threw green dye mixed with acid in his face.
Navalny is a very brave man, and he has been attacked several times.
Then, in 2020...
On a plane bound for Moscow, paramedics rush to help a passenger in pain. Alexei Navalny was so ill, pilots had to make an emergency landing.
He was evacuated to Germany in a coma, where it was found that he'd been poisoned with a Soviet-era nerve agent. Putin may have hoped that Navalny would never return. Russian authorities promised to arrest him if he did. But 5 months later...
As a citizen of Russia, I have the absolute right to return home. Those in power are not just disgusting thieves. They are also totally pathetic people.
He was arrested.
His crime, violating parole while recovering in Germany after being poisoned with a Russian nerve agent.
Violating parole while in a coma. Got him. Last month, after 3 years behind bars, Navalny died. He's not the only Putin challenger to wind up dead, plagued by scandal, or otherwise taken out of the running for president. Legitimate contenders for the crown never last long. So the elections in Russia aren't entirely fake. The votes are real, and the parties led by Zhuganov and Zhirinovsky are real as well. Putin can claim to be a moderate, a sensible centrist, beloved across Russia, a man who represents all Russians. He can crush any protest movement against him because anti-Putin protests are inherently anti-Russia protests. They're a threat to national security.
Over 15,000 Russians have been detained for protesting against the war since Putin invaded Ukraine.
In the international community, dictators are taken less seriously than democratically elected leaders. But look, come, observe my election. See, I'm not a dictator. Up until the invasion of Ukraine in 2022, the rest of the world kind of just went along with this charade. This election is the first one where the US president won't call him to congratulate him on winning. But an election where you ban any real challengers is not an election. Putin thinks that his greatest threat is a better version of himself. So he makes sure that none exist, even in the mirror. If You're Listening is written by me, Matt Bevan. Supervising producer is Yasmin Parry. Hey, in a couple of weeks, we're going to be recording If You're Listening in front of a live audience at the Newcastle Writers Festival. If you're in Newcastle or nearby and want to see me try and do this entire show live on stage, the event is on at the Civic Playhouse at 4:30 in the afternoon on Sunday the 7th of April. There's no bookings or tickets. It's free to get in. I hope to see you there. Otherwise, I'll see you next week right here on the podcast feed.